hour-long presentation from Alternative Radio down in Boulder, Colorado.
Welcome to the February 23rd edition of Drama Text. Tonight on the show, we're rebroadcasting a lecture that we presented 1 year ago, commemorating the passing away of Lawrence Ferlinghetti. So here it is. Tonight we'll be presenting a one-hour lecture by the work of American poet Lawrence Ferlinghetti. He passed away this week at the age of 101. This is from a recording found on YouTube, and from this one-hour reading of Ferlinghetti, reading it in the Iowa Writers' Workshop in 1966, December of 1966. So almost 34, 55 years ago, in his ripe middle age. So, without further ado, here's tonight's presentation of Drama Text, a reading of the work of Lawrence Ferlinghetti.
Where is Vietnam? Meanwhile, back at the ranch, the then president, also known as Colonel Cornpone, got out a blank army draft and began to fill in the spaces with men. And Colonel Cornpone got down to the bottom of the order, where there is a space to indicate just where the troops are to be sent, and Colonel Cornpone got a faraway look in his eye and reached out and started spinning a globe of the world. And his eye wandered over the spinning surface of the world, and after a long time he said, "I see no relief." So they brought him a relief map of the world. And he looked at it a long time and said, "Thank you, gentlemen. I see it all very clearly now. Yes, indeed. Everything stands out very clearly now. And I can see the oceans themselves rolling back and Western civilization still marching westward around the world. And the new frontier now truly knows no boundaries. And those there Vietnamese don't stand a Chinaman's chance in hell. But still, there's all these Chinamen who think they do. And also think they can actually reverse the westward march of civilization and actually reverse the natural westward spin of our globe. But gentlemen, these are not war games. This is not space angels. This is the real thing, gentlemen. And I know right exactly where this here Vietnam is, gentlemen, and I want to make doubly sure that all our own people know right exactly where this here Vietnam is, gentlemen, in case any of you should happen to get cornered by some eggheads or someone." And just then, Lady Bird came running, and Colonel Cornpone stepped into the cloakroom and whispered to her, "The world really does rotate westward, don't it?" And she, being smarter than he, as is usually the case, whispered back that this here Vietnam was not a place but a state of mind. And Colonel Cornpone got that old faraway look again and stepped back onto the front porch where they keep the rockers and sat there rocking for a long time and then said, "Gentlemen, I'm a family man and this is for real. And I am hereby ordering the complete and final liberation of Vietnam. For the roots of the trouble are found wherever the landless and oppressed, the poor and despised, stand before the gates of opportunity and are not allowed across into the great society which seems to lie out before me like a land of dreams. And so, gentlemen, here we go. Fasten your seat belts. We are powerful and free and united. There ain't much we can do. And so, gentlemen, let me point out to you exactly where it is we all are going on this here globe, because, gentlemen, even though I am reputed never to have been out of the United States, I do know right where we are going on the brink of Vietnam. And even though we don't want to stop the world spinning in the right direction, even for an instant, I do want to slow it down just long enough for me to put my finger for you right on this here sore spot, which is Vietnam. And Colonel Cornpone put out his hand to slow down the world just a bit. But this world would not be slowed down a bit this world would not stop spinning at all. And Texas and Vietnam spun on together faster and faster, slipping away under Colonel Cornpone's hand because the surface of this world had suddenly become very, very slippery with a strange kind of red liquid that ran on it across all the obscene boundaries. And this world went on spinning faster and faster in the same so predestined direction and kept on spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning. Parade tirade. Good night, ladies, and good night, nuns and priests and monks who never march in peace parades. Protestants shouldn't protest. The holy wars are over. The only united crusade, a fund drive. And good night, holy ministers who evict peace groups from their premises. Onward, Christian soldiers. And good night, good gray soldier, and good night, sweet Prince Kennedy. As long as there are guns, they will speak telescopically. And good night, Colonel Cornpone, and good night, sad cop who turned the hoses on a whole generation and flipped later. And good night, asinine Armistice Day parades that nobody under 40 believes in. Don't laugh, you should take them seriously. Those big phony scenes which have nothing to do with us and the way we want to live. The America of the American Legion isn't ours. This ain't 1919. Let them march off a cliff somewhere with their obscene sidearms and sinister slogans. Call out the horse Marines and clean up the mess. I didn't know they piled it that high. You won't get us to run your errands anymore, but here comes a band anyway. A catch in the throat, a Lady Liberty on a float. God save our country's flag, she said. And God knows veterans love wars. Their eyes have seen the glory when old comrades get together. Like in the good old days. So, sweep away the pickets, and good day to you, Dr. Teller, Chief Steppenwolf, who stood on guard with warheads and strategies of overkill, bomb now, pay later. And good night, blind flight of black avenging angels, bow marks of death zeroed on infinity, and good night, great mute poets and professors who only stand and wait, and good night, Papa Hemingway, who also finked out. And good night, Grandpa Ezra, and good night, Reverend Elliot, who also fabricated and abdicated. Hurry up, please, it's time. And good night, stream of unconscious novelists and non-objecting painters, thou shalt not kill except by complicity. And good day, Dylan, we shall not go gentle into their good night. And good day, Neruda, and good day, Ginsburg, who saw the great heads draw back weeping from their plots. And good day, Fidel. He doesn't want to marry your sister. He just wants to socialize. And good night, sweet dreams, crazy Karl Marx. I, too, wish the state would wither away into a world without countries and their great draggy nationalisms and their great draggy governments, which aren't our idea of communities of love. So good night, old, old comrades. The good old days are gone forever. So goodbye, goodbye, death. And good morning, sun, and goodbye, senators, and good morning, heart that wakes at night and hears itself, and good morning, crocus voices, and good morning, water birds, cawing and cawing, and good morning, lovers, south of 14th Street, about to turn off the whole evil scene and turn on beautiful and great where the air is green. I found the light. Let there be light. There, as I said this afternoon in the writing workshop, there seems to be two beings running along inside of every poet, if not inside everyone. There's the love and ecstasy seeking being. And then there's this political lout running alongside who's always trying to horn in And every once in a while, you have to pause from your love and ecstasy seeking and lay out this lout and give him a few cuffs and get rid of him till the monster creeps up on you again. Well, now I've disposed of him for the evening. For the moment, he's somnolent. Well, I hope to read nothing but love poems or semi-love poems. Semi-love poems, a new type of love. Going through three books of mine looking for love. First is Pictures of the Gone World. Just as I used to say, love comes harder to the aged because they've been running on the same old rails too long. And then when the sly switch comes along, they miss the turn and burn up the wrong rail while the gay caboose goes flying. And the steam engine driver don't recognize them new electric horns. And the aged run out on the rusty spur, which ends up in the dead grass, where the rusty tin cans and bed springs and old razor blades and moldy mattresses lie. And the rails break off dead right there. And the aged say to themselves, well, this must be the place we were supposed to lie down. And they do. While the bright saloon careens along away on a high hilltop, its windows full of blue sky and lovers with flowers, their long hair streaming, and all of them laughing and waving and whispering to each other and looking out and wondering what that graveyard where the rails end is. This starts out with a Spanish Impressionist painter named Sorolla and turns into a love poem. Sorolla's women in their picture hats stretched upon his canvas beaches beguiled the Spanish Impressionists. And were they fraudulent pictures of the world, the way the light played on them, creating illusions of love? I cannot help but think that their reality was almost as real as my memory of today when the last sun hung on the hills and I heard the day falling like the gulls that fell almost to land, while the last picnickers lay and loved in the blowing yellow broom, resisted and resisting, tearing themselves apart again, again, until the last hot hung climax, which could at last no longer be resisted, made them moan, and night's trees stood up. Well, this is two portraits of women, different women. Inasmuch as women are usually associated with love, I'll read them. And she, like a young year walking through the earth in the Bois de Boulogne that time, or as I remember her, stepping out of a bathtub in that gold flat she had, corner of Boulevard des Italiens. Oh, they say she tried everything before the end. Took up television and crosswords, even crocheting and things like that, and came to have the air before the end, as her favorite poet described her, of always carrying flowers toward some far abandoned tomb, which doesn't surprise me now that I come to think of it. The struck seed was in her. Another woman. It was a face which darkness could kill in an instant, a face as easily hurt by laughter or light. We think differently at night, she told me once, lying back languidly, and she would quote Cocteau. I feel there is an angel in me, she'd say, whom I am constantly shocking. Then she would smile and look away, light a cigarette for me, sigh and rise and stretch her sweet anatomy, let fall a stocking. Number 21 in the book. They're just numbered. Heaven was only half as far that night at the poetry recital, listening to the burnt phrases, when I heard the poet have a rhyming erection, then look away with a lost look. Every animal, he said at last, after intercourse is sad, but the back row lovers looked oblivious and glad. Omni animalis post coitum triste. Next book is Coney Island of the Mind. Following this theme through the book, number 7. What could she say to the fantastic Foolie Bear? And what could she say to Brother? And what could she say to the cat with future feet? And what could she say to Mother after that time that she lay lush among the lolly flowers on that hot riverbank where ferns fell away in the broken air of the breath of her lover, and birds went mad and threw themselves from trees to taste, still hot upon the ground, the spilled sperm seed. Well, I suppose this is a love poem. Number 9. See, it was like this. When we waltz into this place, a couple of papish cats is doing an Aztec two-step. And I says, Dad, let's cut. But then this dame comes up behind me, see, and says, you and me could really exist. Wow, I says. Only the next day, she has bad teeth and really hates poetry. Number 10. I have not lain with beauty all my life, telling over to myself its most rife charms. I have not lain with beauty all my life and lied with it as well, telling over to myself how beauty never dies, but lies apart among the aborigines of art and far above the battlefields of love. It is above all that, oh yes, it sits upon the choicest of church seats, up there where art directors meet to choose the things for immortality. And they have lain with beauty all their lives, and they have fed on honeydew and drunk the wines of paradise, so that they know exactly how a thing of beauty is a joy forever and forever, and how it never, never quite can fade into a money-losing nothingness. Oh, no, I have not lain on beauty rest like this, afraid to rise at night for fear that I might somehow miss some movement beauty might have made. Yet I have slept with beauty in my own weird way, and I have made a hungry scene or two with beauty in my bed, and so spilled out another poem or two upon the Bosch-like world. Hieronymus Bosch, that is. Number 20, sort of a love poem. The Penny Candy Store, beyond the L, is where I first fell in love with unreality. Jelly beans glowed in the semi-gloom of that September afternoon. A cat upon the counter moved among the licorice sticks and Tootsie Rolls and Old Boy Gum. Outside, the leaves were falling as they died. A wind had blown away the sun. A girl ran in. Her hair was rainy. Her breasts were breathless in the little room. Outside, the leaves were falling, and they cried, "Too soon, too soon." 21. She loved to look at flowers, smell fruit, and the leaves had the look of loving. But half-assed drunken sailors staggered through her sleep, scattering semen over the virgin landscape. At a certain age, her heart put about, searching the lost shores, and heard the green birds singing from the other side of silence. 28 for classical scholars. It's a classical love poem. Dove sta amore, where lies love? Dove sta amore, here lies love. The ring dove love in lyrical delight. Here love's hill song, love's true will song, love's low plain song, too sweet pain song in passages of night. Dove sta amore, here lies love. The ring dove love, dove sta amore, here lies love. This number 29 is the last in the section of Coney Island of Mine, which rather rounds out this sequence of love poems. And that's the way it always is. And that's the way it always ends. And the fire and the rose are one, and always the same scene, and always the same subject, right from the beginning, like in the Bible, or the sun also rises, which begins, Robert Cohn was middleweight boxing champion of his class, but later we lost our balls. And there we go again, there we are again. There's the same old theme and scene again with all the citizens and all the characters all working up to it right from the first. And it looks like all they ever think of is doing it. And it doesn't matter much with whom half the time, but the other half, it matters more than anything. Oh, the sweet love fevers, yes. And there's always complications, like maybe she has no eyes for him, or him no eyes for her, or her no eyes for her, or him no eyes for him. Or something or other stands in the way, like his mother or her father or someone like that. But they go right on trying to get it all the time, like in Shakespeare or The Wasteland or Proust remembering his things. Or wherever, and there they all are, struggling on toward each other or after each other, like those marble maidens on that Grecian urn, or on any market street or merry-go-round, around and around they go, all hunting love, and half the hungry time not even knowing just what is really eating them, like Robin walking in her nightwood streets, although it isn't quite as simple as all that, as if all she really needed was a good 5-cent cigar. Oh, no. And those who have not hunted will not recognize the hunting poise. And then the hawks that hover where the heart is hid, and the hungry horses crying, and the stone angels, and heaven and hell, and Yerma with her blind breasts under her dress. And then Christopher Columbus sailing off in search, and Rudolph Valentino and Juliet and Romeo and John Barrymore and Anna Livia and Abe's Irish Rose and So Good Night, Sweet Prince all over again. With everyone and everybody laughing and crying along, wherever night and day, winter and summer, spring and tomorrow, like Anna Karenina lost in the wood, in the snow, and the cry of hunters in a great wood, and the soldiers coming, and Freud and Ulysses always on their hungry travels after the same hot grail, like King Arthur and his nighttime nights, and everybody wondering where and how it will all end, like in the movies or in some night maze novel. Yes, as in a night maze, yes, I said, yes, I will. And he called me his Andalusian rose. And I said, yes, my heart was going like mad. And that's the way Ulysses ends, as everything always ends, when that hunting cock of flesh at last cries out and has his glory moment, God, and then comes tumbling down the sound of axes in the wood and the trees falling. And down it goes, the sweet cock sword, so wilting in the fair flesh fields, away, alone, at last, and loved and lost and found upon a river bank, along a river run, right where it all began, and so begins again. The third book is starting from San Francisco. A couple from this, and then we'll have an intermission. This one isn't really a love poem, except I love autumn. Wrote this on a bus. New York, Albany. God, I had forgotten how the Hudson burns in Indian autumn. Saugerties, Coxsackie, fall away through all those trees. The leaves die turning, falling, fallen, falling into loam of dark, yellow into death, disappearing, falling, fallen, falling. God, God, those pestilence-stricken multitudes rushed into the streets, blown, all blasted. They are hurting them with wood rakes. They are raking them in great hills. They are burning them. Lord, Lord, the leaves curl burning. The curl smoke gives up to eternity. Never the same leaf turn again. The same leaves burn. Lord, Lord, in a red field, a white stallion stands and pees his oblivion upon those leaves. Washing my bus window, only now blacked out by a covered bridge we flash through. Only once, no round-trip ticket. Lord, Lord, never returning. The youth years fallen away back then under the linden trees in Boston Common. Lord, Lord, trees think through these woods of years. They flame forever with those thoughts. Lord, Lord, I did not see eternity the other night, but now in burning, turning day, Lord, 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 every bush burns, love licks all down, all gone in the red end. Lord, 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 small nuts fall. I too. Euphoria. This is a strange poem to me. Euphoria. As I approach the state of pure euphoria, I find I need a larger size typewriter case to carry my underwear in. And scars on my conscience are wounds embedded in the gum eraser of my skin, which still erases itself. As I approach the state of pure euphoria, moon hides hot face in cool rice rain of Chinese painting, and I cannot sleep because of the thunder under the summer afternoon, in which a girl puts on a record of crazy attempts to play a saxophone, punctuated by terrible forced laughter in another room. As I approach a state of pure euphoria, they are building all the cities now on only one side of the street, and my shoes walk up sides of buildings, leaving tracks of windows where their soles of pain's about to crack, and shoe tongues of roll-up shades alack. I see my roll-up tongue upon a string, and see my face upon the stick of it, as on a pendulum about to swing, a playing card image with bound feet, an upside-down hanged Villon. And Mama recedes in a handheld photo, and Dad is named Ludwig in a lost real estate project ended in water, Saratoga Avenue, Yonkers. Where I now hang and swing on a last tree that stands drinking, and where I'd still sing part songs in a field of rapture, but an angel has me by the balls, and my castrato voice comes out too small with a girl that puts a laughing record on in another room. As I approach the state of pure euphoria, my eyes are gringo spies, and I may anytime be changed to birds by a tungus explosion that controls time. But I am no apocalyptic kid and cannot sleep because of the thunder under the summer afternoon. And my dumb bird's eye starts out of my head and flies around the world in which a girl puts on her record made of flesh. And I am animals without clothes looking for a naked unity. But I'm divided up into countries, and I'm in Tibet on potato legs, and am a strange kind of clown with beflowered face and hair plastered down, and cannot sleep because of the thunder under the needle my flesh turns under. She has turned it on, she has turned it over, she has turned me on to play my other side. Her breasts bloom, figs burst, sun is white, I'll never come back, I wear Egyptian clothing. One more classical love poem to match the one I read from the other book. And come lie with me and be my love. Love, lie with me, lie down with me under the cypress tree in the sweet grasses where the wind lieth, where the wind dieth as night passes. Come lie with me, all night with me. And have enough of kissing me, and have enough of making love, and let my lizard speak to thee, and let our two selves speak all night under the cypress tree without making love. I'd like to take a small intermission. After the break, I'm going to read nothing but unpublished poems that I've written since July. So about another half hour. One poem that I forgot to read in the first set from starting from San Francisco, which is a serious poem about underwear, which turns into a love poem. That's what happens in underwear quite often. I didn't get much sleep last night thinking about underwear. Have you ever stopped to consider underwear in the abstract? When you really dig into it, some shocking problems are raised. Underwear is something we all have to deal with. Everyone wears some kind of underwear. Even Indians wear underwear. Even Cubans wear underwear. The Pope wears underwear, I hope. Underwear is worn by Negroes. The governor of Louisiana wears underwear. I saw him on TV. He must have had tight underwear. He squirmed a lot. Underwear can really get you in a bind. Negroes often wear white underwear, which may lead to trouble. And you have seen the underwear ads for men and women. So alike, but so different. Women's underwear holds things up. Men's underwear holds things down. Underwear is one thing men and women do have in common. Underwear is all we have between us in the end. And you've seen the three color pictures with crotches encircled to show the areas of extra strength and three-way stretch, promising full freedom of action. Don't be deceived. It's all based on the two-party system, which doesn't allow much freedom of choice the way things are set up. America in its underwear struggles through the night. Underwear controls everything in the end. Take foundation garments, for instance. They are really fascist forms of underground government, making people believe something but the truth, telling you what you can or can't do. Did you ever try to get around a girdle? Perhaps nonviolent action is the only answer. Did Gandhi wear a girdle? Did Lady Macbeth wear a girdle? Was that why Macbeth murdered sleep? And that spot she was always rubbing, was it really in her underwear? Modern Anglo-Saxon ladies must have huge guilt complexes, always washing and washing and washing out damned spot. Underwear with spots, very suspicious. Underwear with bulges, very shocking. Underwear on clothesline, a great flag of freedom. Someone has escaped his underwear, maybe naked somewhere. Help! But don't worry, everybody's still hung up in it. There won't be no real revolution. And poetry, still the underwear of the soul. And underwear, still covering a multitude of faults in the geologic sense. Strange sedimentary stones, inscrutable cracks. And that, only the beginning. For does not the body stay alive after death? And still need its underwear, or outgrow it. Some organs said to reach full maturity only after the head stops holding them back. If I were you, I'd keep a size, an oversized pair of winter underwear. Do not go naked into that good night. And in the meantime, keep calm and warm and dry. No use stirring ourselves up prematurely over nothing. Move forward with dignity, hand in vest. Don't get emotional, and death shall have no dominion. There's plenty of time, my darling. Are we not still young and easy? Don't shout. These are four poems, two long ones, two short ones, from a book I hope to call After the Cries of the Birds. First one, short one, Great Progress. These poems are an entirely different kind of poetry to me, and I don't know whether they'll seem that way to you. Great Progress, Through the Looking Glass with Alice. 10 years of dreams in the green forest, uplands of the imagination, far green grottos, future books of the Illuminati writ out there across the landscape, intolerable arabesques coming and coming and coming, on and on toward me, on to me, relentless, effortless with Alan, ineffable, coming down now, re-echoing, gliding down, landscapes and arabesques of earth, sea re-glitterized, seen through a silk screen overlay. On and on, it keeps coming out there, up there, keeps going on and on, over the horizon, into eternity, now that the cries of the birds has stopped. Oh, I alone walk the red heavens, the first trembling steps in the direction of the Dharma. This is Plain Down, written on a flight from Cincinnati to Chicago yesterday and all day today. Deep blue haze, Electra wings through, illimitable, white bird in it, far off, skimming, or a white plane, skating way down there, shadow of it sweeping the brown landscape, disappeared now into the great ground, as if fallen while its plane still flies on, miraculously. Green parks and frond ponds slip away below. Sunday Chicago appears at end of brown carpet, stuck to Lake Michigan, great flat blue cloud of it stretched out. Rich resorts and lakeshore fronts, beaches lapped in eternity, pavilions asleep in time, hum of Electra winging down, wigging down, seat belts on, flaps down, swinging around for re-entry into that world. Engine drones like a tambura, passage to India on LSD Airlines. Temporary flight of ecstatic insanity into its own glittering terminals, pulsing with light, gliding down and down through sunny Sunday afternoon dream. How calm all. Still autumn forest, golf link in it, straightway highway into a clover leaf, cars crawling the petals, huge cemetery in brown woods, death itself only another higher form of temporary ecstatic insanity. Out of your skull, into the ground. How soft the trees down there, how very soft from up here. We could almost bounce into them, soft landing among the branches, and so on down into the soft ground, as if we don't ever die, but become new burrowing consciousnesses, earthworm tractors. Zoom! Still a scary landing into that underground. This is called Who Knows? From a dream after talking to Irish Mary Boyle on the phone, midnight, New York City, October 19th. And that same Dickey tree at the end of the woods, where we walked once out of Dublin, Ireland. What was that all about? That conversation way back there in some other century about what's that ye were saying about you and me and why we never made it? And such, and so on, so important, so urgent, so inchoate. And what was it all about? Who knows? We walked away from it, away from ourselves with each other, as from any accident, still alive and breathing, happy still to be on the planet, free. All right, two long poems to end with. Each is about 8 minutes. This is After the Cries of the Birds Has Stopped. Hurrying through eternity, after the cries of the birds has stopped, I see the future of the world in a new visionary society, now only dimly recognizable in folk rock ballrooms. Free-form dancers in ecstatic clothing, their hearts their gurus, every man his own myth, butterflies in amber, caught fucking life, hurrying through eternity to a new pastoral era. I see the shadows of that future in that white island, which is San Francisco, floating in its foreign sea, seen high on a hill in the Berkeley Rose Garden, looking west at sunset to the Golden Gate, adrift in its Japanese landscape, under Mount Tamil Fuji, with its grazing bulls hurrying through heaven. The city, with its white buildings, a temple to some unknown god, as Vosnesensky said, after the cries of the birds has stopped, I see the sea come in over South San Francisco, and the island of the city truly floated free at last, never really a part of America, east, east, and west, west, and the twain met long ago in the wish to pursue what lies beyond the mind, with no place to go but in. After Columbus recovered America and the West Coast captured by some Spanish Catholics cagily getting the jump by sea, covered wagons crawling over lost plains hung up in Oklahoma, prairie schooners into Pullmans, whole tribes of Indians shake hopeless feather lances and disappear over the horizon, to reappear centuries later, feet up and smoking wild cigars at the corner of Hollywood and Vine. Hurrying through eternity, must we wait for the cries of the birds to be stopped before we dig in? After centuries of running up and down the coast of West, looking for the right place to jump off further westward, the Gutenberg galaxy casts its light no further. The westward march of civilization comes to a dead stop on the shores of Big Sur, Portland, and Santa Monica, and turns upon itself at last, after the cries of the birds have stopped. Must we wait for that to dig a new model of the universe with instant communication, a world village in which every human being is a part of us, though we be still throwaways in an evolutionary progression? As Spengler reverses himself and Mark Twain meets Jack London and turns back to Mississippi shaking his head, and the last frontier, having no place to go but in, can't face it and buries its head. Western civilization, gone too far west, might suffer a sea change into something else far eastern, and that won't do. The Chinese are coming anyway, time we prepared their tea. Gunga Din's still with us. Kipling nods and cries, "I told you so." The French king hollers, "Merde," and abandons his Vietnam bordel. But not us. We love them too much for that. Though the Mayflower turned around, set sail again, back to Plymouth, England, and the Piltdown let down. Misjudging the coast and landing in Liverpool, American poets capture Royal Albert Hall. The Jefferson Airplane rock group takes off and circles heaven. The mind dies, Christ is reincarnated, and Buddha ascends at the Village Theater. It all figures in a new litany, probably pastoral, after the cries of the birds has stopped. After the cries of the birds has stopped, rose petals fall in the Berkeley Rose Garden, where I sit trying to remember the lines about rose leaves in the four quartets. Stella kisses her lover in the sunset under an arbor. A Los Angeles actor nearby goes zap, zap at the setting sun. It is the end. I drop downhill into a reception for Anais Nin with a paper bag full of rose leaves. She is autographing her book. I empty the bag over her head from behind. Her gold lacquered hair sheds the petals. They tumble red and yellow on her signed book. Girl again, she presses them between the leaves delightedly, like fallen friends. Her words echo thus in my heart, Virginia Woolf underwater. She drifts away on the book, a leaf herself, blowing skittered over the horizon. The wish to pursue what lies beyond the mind lies just beyond. Ask a flower what it does to move beyond the senses. Our cells hate metal. The tide turns. We shoot holes in the cloud's trousers, and napalm sears the hillside, skips the bridge, narrows to a grass hut full of charred bodies, and is later reported looking like, quote, the eternal flame at Kennedy's grave, unquote. A tree flowers red, it can't run. Shall we now advance into the 21st century? I see the lyric future of the world on the beaches of Big Sur, gurus at Jack's Flats, nude swart maidens swimming in pools of sunlight, Kali dancing on the beach, guitarists with one earring, lovely girls in long dresses and Indian headbands. What does this have to do with Lenin? Plenty. Die-hard Maoists lie down together crosswise, and out comes a string of Chinese firecrackers. And after the cries of the birds has stopped, Chinese junks show up suddenly off the coast of Big Sur, filled with more than Chinese philosophers dreaming they are butterflies. How shall we greet them? Are we ready to receive them? Shall we put out koan, stepping stones, scrolls and bowls, greet them with love feasts and agape, tofu and bamboo flutes at midnight? Big Sur junk, meet Chinese junk. Will they ride the breakers into Bixby Cove? Will they bring their women with them? Will we take them on the beach like Ron Boise's lovers in Kama Sutra? Face them with Zen, Zazen, and tea, made from the dust of the wings of butterflies, dreaming they're philosophers? Or meet them with last war's tanks roaring out of Fort Ord, down the highways and canyons, shooting as they come, flamethrowers flaming jelly into the Chinese rushes under the bridge at Bixby. The U.S. owns the highway, but is Big Sur in the USA? San Francisco floats away beyond the three-mile limit of the District of Eternal Revenue. No need to pay your taxes. The seas come in to cover us. Agape we are, and agape we'll be. One more long one. It's in four parts. It's called Four Fugitive Configurations. It's a love poem. Part one. A tree in a dream at dawn, with all its leaves nodding yes, each a shadow of a blown bird, and you are absent, but your legs are not absent. I see them moving. They are not alabaster. They move in the dark of your dress. A mouth between them mentions love. They move your feet, and the feet move in light below that dark. They will not change direction. They will not stop coming, though you are coming a long time. And they a long way from the heart that moves them with blood. I too am moving. I too have feet. They too leave much behind. They too will not turn away. They too do not fly. Birds have no shadows in the sky. I will not change my mind. I long to look in your eyes, imaginary woman. Part two. Fugitive configurations, stick figures on a distant cliff, our bodies soon all blown away. All transitory, all imaginary, graceless, stuttering. Nothing exists beyond nothing. We are nothing but ephemera scribbled on a distant landscape. Brushed away, light out of light, flickered. I long to look in your eyes. Crickets wake me out of that deep. I rise and look over the sea in first morning. It is a great gray eye, pearl pupil glimmering, opening and closing its lace eyelashes. We constantly awake to a dream deeper than sleep. Figures on a cliff erased, lips upon the beach washed out, sea's mouth yawning utters, oceans long withdrawing home. They are swimming through it. They are surfing in it through the lashes. They are drowning in it. Panic ephemera. Ah, the skillful yachts still pass over. Eye winks open. Oh, I am open. I look into the gray deeps. Dark, dark. I look into your eyes. Part three. Oh, I've a hunger still, an absolute hunger, to see you still, be with you still, on the hot beach where the light pulses, there where, what else is there but us, flesh fantasies, molting and moldering, beginning and beginning again, longing and lingering, where the light pulses, I look into your eyes. It is all an illusion. Yes, but we know all that, you said. Go on from there into our first yearning. We cannot be certain, yet we are. Shall we yet live in olivet landscapes, plazas under plane trees, the white towns empty, white birds dumb, distant land I left, The days drifted down into drunk evenings, woke to the seabird's cry long ago. And yet I too, on that last boat returning and returning, shall I go again after two lost decades? Time clocks hang heavy in the head of every animal, with a wire to the moon, which isn't the same as saying time passes. It doesn't. It merely is present as we stutter by into eternity, still calling to each other over and over. We are smoke in a lyric landscape, shuttered. We walk where the trees are still, despite the new steel sidewalks and the strange soldiers. Crickets sing among the palmettos where there are no birds, where I still long to look in your eyes. Deep, deep, light out of light, terrible and lonely, let me in. Nothing begins and nothing ends. A silent ship sails endlessly over a horizon. Part four. Late, late, the old trees heavy in the parks, youth, love, night thoughts, echoed voices, all down now among the underbrush. They are carting off the remains of a small bird. The scavengers wind their old pocket watches and present their bills to the tenants without ever thinking of what they have salvaged. The dog waters the rose, the bridges loaded with dark figures hurrying over, intolerable. Intolerable beginnings over and over, flesh flowers sprung up again and again, turn and turn again to the sun again, over and over again, after the cries of the birds have stopped, beginning and beginning again, under the linden trees in Boston Common. Oh, death is heartless. They are hunting Easter eggs behind the Catholic Church, Craft Avenue, Bronxville. The nuns come hovering down the dark corridor like black bats. I have run from them for the last time. I am hunting over other horizons. Where now? Too soon, too late. We keep calling to each other across beds and bridges too narrow to reach across. We keep calling, wait, wait. So many songs, so many cries, so many mouths open in ecstasy, so many moanings, so many lips, hands, breaths, flowers, telegrams falling petal by petal. Don't forget. Where gone now? Not met yet? Never found, after all? I long still to look in your eyes. What else is there? The sun is shining in the spider webs. The silk leaves turn again. World turns on and on with us. And the laughter, the lips, the dark figures, the old trees, and the trains again, full of an absolute hunger.
So that concludes this week's edition of Dramatext. You've been listening to a reading of Lawrence Ferlinghetti, delivered in Iowa in December of 1966, found on YouTube. Lawrence Ferlinghetti passed away a year ago in February. So till next week.
Through Tree Canada's National Greening Program, native tree seedlings are planted across Canada, creating a widespread impact. The planted trees provide habitat, prevent soil erosion, and reforest areas that have suffered tree loss due to pests and weather. Tree Canada performs 1, 2, and 5-year assessments to monitor tree survival and ensure the trees planted are on track to meet the forest cover goals of the site. To learn more or to get involved, go to treecanada.ca.
My name is Debi, storyteller, dub poet, partly raised in Montreal, 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 launching my new CD 333. You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.